Take two. Linoleum Knife. You know, that theme song sounds Christmassier.
It does.
Each passing week of
in
December.
In the context of the
jingling,
season.
The jingling, tingling mm-hmm. of it is maybe
and that's
it
why,
should be.
That's why I like it so much.
Okay. Because it's year-round Christmas sounding.
Uh-huh. All right. I got no beef with that.
Linoleum Knife that you were listening to is a podcast of the cinema hosted by me. I am Dave White. I am the film critic of Movies.com. Sitting next to me is Lunch.
Yes, Lunchgate. It's a shocker.
Explain yourself, Lunch.
Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
And you're full of lunch.
And we had lunch, and it's the worst thing that to ever happen.
Flabby. Corrupt.
Yes.
Lazy.
What Dave's referring to is the fact that the Los Angeles...
You forgot to mention disrespectful.
Shut up and go fix me a turkey, by the way. Los Angeles Film Critics Association had their annual voting meeting today. And Mr. Jeffrey Wells...
I have never met. I know he's a dude who writes things in Los Angeles.
Yes.
I know what he looks like. I've seen him at film screenings from time to time. I know he exists.
He's not
a we've never met.
He's not a critic so much as he's more like one of the kind of awards pundits. And
But he's all year. He writes all year long.
He does.
His own website or whatever. Entertainment news.
He has his own site and he talks about
movie news and stuff.
Yes. But not so much a
critic. I don't know this dude.
Well, anyway, so LAFCA, as we do every year, took a pause in the middle of the voting meeting and had lunch. Now, when I started in this group, the first year I voted with LAFCA was 1994. I still remember the years where my publicist friends would say, okay, I need you to call me as soon as the meeting is over and tell me what won.
Yes.
You know, because then they could scramble and do whatever they needed to do.
Yes.
And that was sort of a thing. I would ride home and somebody else would drive and I would call and tell them whatever. And then, of course, the internet happened, and Twitter happened, and now, you know, we live tweet the thing. For each category, an award gets, you know, given, and then we tweet out who won. So this year, like we did every year, halfway through, we had a nice lunch break. We took a group photo, because we hadn't done that in several years, had some sandwiches.
Unconscionable.
Chatted, enjoyed each other's company. Well, apparently...
Lunch Gazi.
Yes, we're just the worst people ever.
Lunchgate.
According to Mr. Wells, the internet needs answers now, and how dare you stop for lunch? You can do that later. Twitter is hanging on your every word. Oh my God.
Monsters.
So yeah.
What did you eat? What did you eat?
Cold cuts.
Really?
Yeah. It was a...
Didn't anybody bring anything good?
It's like a deli tray.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Y'all can't get together for something better than lunch meat deli trays?
Dude, you got to feed a lot of people. And
what, 40 people? We had a Christmas... Let me tell you something. Maybe you forgot. Yesterday, I don't know if you remember.
It was so long ago.
You and I had a big Christmas party here at our house, and there was like 100 people here.
Yep.
And we made them for real food. Mm. And I was cooking, baking things for a few days in advance. And
would you make that kind of effort?
We put out the trough.
Would you make that kind of effort for LAFCA?
I put my foot in it.
you do that for our friends. You wouldn't do it for LAFCA.
Well, okay. I would do it for Amy.
For your friends who are in LAFCA.
I would do it for Amy. Uh-huh. And I would do it for Todd. Uh-huh. And I would do it for James.
And Alinda.
I would do it for Christy. Is Alinda still in?
Yeah, yeah.
She's still in the group?
She is.
Did she bring baby?
She did not bring the baby.
She should bring the baby and let the baby vote.
That would be great. Christy.
I do it for Christy and Alinda.
There's a lot of Robert.
I do it for Robert. I do it for John.
You like a lot of people in that group.
I do like a lot of people in that group.
Anyway, we had cold cuts. It was fine. But yeah, so apparently our lunch was
not good enough.
Our lunch was a scandal. But, you know, somehow the internet managed to survive and wait for us to finish having lunch to finish voting our stuff. And I got to say, I'm pretty
so
happy.
So y'all could be boring and vote for Boyhood for everything.
I don't think that's boring. I think Boyhood's great. I think
no,
it deserves
I'm just
what
kidding.
It
gets. That's the other thing people, the internet is complaining
about. Well, of course.
About.
But there's...
Oh, Boyhood again.
This is...
Meh.
Trust me. This is, of all the no-win things that critics do, giving yeah. awards, top of the list.
How did your...
You
were
always
vote,
wrong.
How was your vote for Jennifer Garner in Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day go?
You're so funny.
How was it received?
Well, since I didn't make one, no one had to receive it at all.
I don't even know what you did vote for. There are only two movies that came out this week, so we're going to get to those in
yes.
a minute.
And I saw a couple
know,
of smaller
I need
ones
to know
too.
The answers to real questions first.
For Best Actress, I voted for... I had originally...
Did you got your list? Did
I had,
you write it down
I
somewhere?
I had originally been thinking about Patricia Arquette.
Oh, God, it's on your phone.
It's on my phone.
Yeah.
I had originally been thinking about Patricia Arquette for Best Supporting Actress, because that's sort of...
But then y'all gave it to her for Best Actress.
Yeah, well, yeah. People in the room talked about it, and I mean, think about it, as Devin Faraci, I think, very aptly pointed out,
yes.
if the film had retained its original title of 12 Years and not been changed to Boyhood...
Yes.
Her role would be seen as more of a lead. It would be seen as much of her arc as anybody else's.
True.
Calling the film Boyhood makes it automatically about the kid, although right. the parents, you know, share a lot of screen time. So, you know...
12 years a boy.
There you go. So I had thought about... So she sort of got bumped up. I voted for Scarlett Johansson for Under the Skin.
Oh, yeah.
And I voted for Emily Blunt in Into the Woods, which nice. We'll be talking about in a couple weeks, because
yeah.
I thought she was terrific in that.
Yeah.
So Arquette won. I was great. I thought about that. My Tom Hardy won for Locke. I'm so excited.
What are you gonna do when you meet him?
I'm not gonna get anywhere near him because I'll just be embarrassed. But
Tom Hardy, you're so great.
It's funny because when the vote the runoff for Best Actor was between Tom Hardy and Michael Keaton, and somebody in the room goes, "It's Bane versus Batman all over again." it's not that I'm like gooey over Tom Hardy, which I might be, but I just think he's so great in that movie, and I'm so glad that we're honoring that performance, because this is, you know, some years are like super competitive for Best Actress, and some years are super competitive for Best Actor, and this is an actor year, but I'm not hearing him talked about that much, you know, in the conversation for this stuff, and
that's
like,
true.
So I hope that this ups the profile of the movie, the more people see the movie, because I love the movie.
Yeah.
You showed
it to your class, Professor.
I showed it to my class, yeah. And so I'm very excited about that. A lot of categories came down to Boyhood and Grand Budapest Hotel.
Right.
Those were sort of the two big things. And Budapest won, what, screenplay and production design, I think?
I don't remember.
Score was...
I read tweets and then they evaporate
I'm
in
sure.
my mind.
We did, it's funny, last year we had like three or four ties. So we changed the rules this year that the second round of voting would be paper ballot, so that people couldn't sort of like have their hand halfway up, halfway down, and kind of gauge the room. And we had a tie anyway.
Y'all gauge the room sometimes?
Sometimes.
Why is that?
Because that's just what people do. We're human. So we had a tie. We had a legit tie this year, and it was in the score category, music for Inherent Vice and for Under the Skin.
Nice.
We gave Ida a couple of awards. J.K. Simmons got the Best Supporting Actor for Whiplash. Linklater got Picture Director. We gave it Editing to Sandra Adair and Actress for Arquette. It was a good, nice, you know, cross section of things. Our new generation was Ava DuVernay, which is cool because I like it better when we don't give new generation to a first time filmmaker. I think it's better when they've sort of got two, three movies under their belt and really show they've got something going.
Agreed.
It was good also. This is not to get too inside baseball. Paramount has not been aggressive enough about showing Selma to people in this group. I don't know how they are with the Academy, but as far as LAFCA members, there were people who didn't see it because
I haven't seen it yet.
They didn't like. I got invited to one screening, which I went to.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't send out screeners. They didn't invite me to a whole bunch of them. Usually, when a studio is pushing a movie, they really want you.
They really
to
get.
See it.
They. I remember last year when they had virtually every significant film critic that I know,
uh-huh.
and me, And it wasn't that they invited me. I was your plus one to Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, right. Yeah.
On the night before the voting meeting.
Well, that was one that it was like they got finished so late.
Right.
But they made a big effort to make sure that we all saw it, you know. Yeah. And yeah, for Selma, for some reason, they're not putting in that kind of effort. I don't know what that's about. Big Eyes, I was supposed to get sent a screener.
Yeah.
Never came. Yeah. So, you know, too bad, so sad. Didn't see it, you know.
They sent you American Sniper, though.
They did. It's funny because one of the things that happens in voting is that
why nothing for American Sniper?
Well, it got a few votes here and there, but nothing major. One of the things that we
I haven't seen American Sniper. This is fun to say.
We're always very specific when we vote. Like for example, like when people were voting for Tom Hardy for Locke, you would have to say Tom Hardy for Locke, as opposed to Tom Hardy for The Drop, for instance. You know, like you vote in a single performance, and then
later... really good in The Drop, too.
Well, and then we voted later as to whether or not to include The Drop in the Best Actor performance. We decided not to, just because the Locke performance is so sort of singular and such a singular achievement.
Yes.
But, you know, there had been a write-in vote for... or a proxy. Somebody who wasn't there sent their proxy vote, and one of their votes was for director for Clint Eastwood. And Robert goes, for which movie? And I was like, I think I know which movie. But luckily, the guy had written down American Sniper, so we were clear that it was not Jersey Boys. So that was that. You know, apart from Lunchgate, there was nothing super exciting. But I'm still seething
with rage.
Fury, how dare we?
Over this.
But you know, it was a fun day, and it went smoothly, and you know, with a minimum of fights and actually no fights at all.
Oh, no,
there
fights.
Were no fights. No, and there were
what? Who have you people become?
And there were some.
I rely on you coming home.
I know.
And telling me the dirty fight gossip.
The crankiest of the cranky pants, for various reasons, were not there today. So it was a pretty mellow room, and actually we laughed a lot. So that was that.
Boring.
Sorry. Let me tell you more about lunch. So yeah, so not a minor league week as far as releases go. The biggest release of the week from Fox was The Pyramid, and even that's opening in fewer than 600 screens. So. This is clearly...
There's a reason for that.
Right, because everyone's treading water because, you know, it's Christmas shopping and Mockingjay.
No, there's a reason for...
Oh, why? The Pyramid's in fewer than 600
screens? Under 600 screens.
Yeah, because it's...
Oh, my. I've seen it.
Ugh.
And you seen it.
Uh-huh.
We seen it together.
God.
And it is...
It's...
All right. We're just going to spoil the whole movie for
you. Yeah.
If you are of a mind to...
If you were dying to go out and see The Pyramid and not find out all the fascinating things...
Just fast forward
like
10 minutes or whatever.
We'll come back around to something else.
We're
going to
sit here and talk about it for 5 or 10 minutes. So these dumb jerks go to a pyramid.
Basically.
And they're archaeologists. The only person in this film that is relatively well known is Dennis O'Hare.
Yeah.
He plays the dad archaeologist, and he's got a daughter archaeologist.
Although the hot daughter archaeologist you might know from Chronicle, I've forgotten her name already, but she is, in my review I referred to her as Hot Pants Archaeologist.
Basically, yeah, that's her character. I mean, they even go so far as to make sure that you see her in panties and no top.
Yeah, not that you get to see any, like, actual boobage.
You do, from behind, it's a good chunk of side boob.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine. There's no... For you Mr. Skin types out there, there's no nip.
It has no function in the film other than to...
Titillate.
...frame her as something to...
Ogle.
...get a bone over.
Yeah. It's like...
It's like an early 80s slasher movie
kind
of situation.
Well, it's also kind of reminds me of... Remember in Whiteout where Kate Beckinsale takes a shower early on?
Like in the first 5 minutes,
yeah,
she takes a shower.
Yeah, to make up for
the fact
that she's wearing a parka for the rest of the movie.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you're going to be running around in tunnels and dirty and sweaty, so we're going to show you all, like, you know, creamy smooth.
This
now
is what she really looks like. Right. So they're archaeologists and they go in the pyramid.
And there's a documentary crew.
It's a documentary
crew.
There's
always a documentary
crew. It's a three-sided pyramid, which is architecturally a thing important. The Freemasons built a tunnel.
No,
to
we get
it,
to the Freemasons later.
It doesn't matter.
Which makes no sense. Okay, yeah. they find a three-sided pyramid that has been buried under the sands for millennia.
Yes,
has been naturally covered up in the desert. Yet somehow, in the 19th century, the Freemasons were able to build a tunnel into it.
They're crafty.
Well, I was going to say, that's some real good secrecy there if you manage to, like, not displace any sand while building your tunnel.
And so... excuse me. Pause just a minute. I need to find my notebook.
Okay, Dave has completed normally, and he's found his notes.
You are normally so, you know, picky and smooth about editing when we have to stop.
Well,
but this time you left me in. You left in.
Do you know why?
Me yawning.
Do you know
and
why?
Being all,
do you know
I gotta
why?
Find my notebook.
Do you know why?
Yeah.
Because brrr, a motorcycle was going over the street,
yeah,
and
so?
To cut it in the middle would have been like, brrr, and we're back.
We could have told people we were cutting.
Well, we did tell people we were cutting, and mm-hmm. I cut, and then we're back.
I had to, anyway.
Hey, look, you're yawning while talking about the pyramid, so it's completely, like, organic.
You're podcasting wrong.
Carry on.
So, okay, so they talk about the pyramid for a minute, and then they go to space. And they show you these satellite pictures. And that's going to be like a thing. The movie makes it seem like that's going to be a thing that they're going to talk about. Satellites and aliens and stuff.
No, not really.
And no, they set it up right at the very beginning. Like, oh yeah, we think maybe aliens came and built these pyramids. And here are the satellite photos. And the dad's all grumpy about it. Like, oh, technology is ruining archaeology. It used to be digs and dirt. And now it's these kids and their internets.
Right, but I didn't think that the satellite meant that it was going to be aliens.
They talk about them.
Oh, well...
They talk about them, and then it makes you think, like, okay, well, that's what's going to happen. Mm. Something alien is going to be in there. But no, just ignore that. They never talk about it again. It never rears its head up again. And then, so, they get the pyramid open, and a big loud noise happens. This is actually one of the loudest films I've seen all year. It is an extremely loud...
It's right up there with Interstellar.
...cloud of giant fart or something that comes out of
the pyramid. This green cloud comes out. Again, you know, if you've seen archaeologists in action, it's all about brush, 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 uh-huh. brush, brush, brush. These guys
Love
are
these guys.
Kick, accent,
bang, 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 yeah.
And then this big... of green gas comes out, and this guy starts foaming at the mouth,
right.
And the archaeologist is like, well, you know, sometimes the air inside of tombs and stuff is full of fungi, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, if you knew that, then why were your pickaxe guys not wearing gas masks? Genius.
I gotta move my microphone a little bit.
And then they have to leave the next day because there's rioting in Cairo, 250 miles away.
That's unexplained.
Never explained.
No reasons.
You know how Cairo is.
You know how the Middle East is. There's always angry dudes yelling about something in the street.
So they send their, like, Mars rover robot into the pyramid to find
And they
things.
Call him Shorty because he looks like, what's it, from Short Circuit.
Oh, I didn't think about it. Yeah. Connection. Cute. Because I had just seen the Chappie trailer, so
right.
I was like, okay. Anyway, so some animal attacks the rover, and so, of course, the rover's really expensive, so the guy has to go in after it, and then the archaeologists have to go in after the guy, and then the documentary crew has to follow the archaeologist, so they're all in this tunnel, in this pyramid, and they're basically doomed. They get picked off one by one, Agatha Christie style.
Here are my favorite moments, because in a movie like this, that's so boring and stupid and useless and pointless.
You have to find
things that are pleasurable.
My favorite being, stop being an archaeologist and start being a human being.
My first favorite thing, I have a few. Mm. I have a few pleasures that I found in this film. When the first dude dies.
Yeah.
He's the one who's like, goes, what's that smell? And the minute they talk about the smell and they say it smells like farts... The giant boulder crushes him. And it comes right down. It's like a bang.
It's like the Terry Gilliams two tons thing on Monty Python.
Just, I laughed out loud.
I did too.
And the other people in the theater didn't laugh with me. Because there were only four other people in the theater.
Mm.
They didn't show this in the press, by the way.
Oh, no.
You and I saw it at different times.
Yeah. I also laughed.
So then I also liked the prehistoric monster Sphinx cats.
Oh, yeah,
the feral. And then the woman, the next person who dies, she falls. First of all, she falls like 40 feet,
mm-hmm.
which is enough to make you die. Then she falls onto giant spikes.
Gets impaled.
Which impales her.
In two places.
In two places. yet she is still not dead. Mm. And then the
cats,
out come the cats and start eating her. Elbows. And she's alive. What? And the people of the people who are still alive are like, oh God, she's alive. Oh God, those cats are eating her. And then they go down and they shoo the cats away and they try lifting her up off the spikes. And she's like, ah! They go, this isn't working. Plunk. Down on the ground. Okay, so then
That actress though gave the one bit of actual acting in the movie where like they're trudging along the tunnel, and then when she's on camera, she suddenly turns into perky TV announcer lady, and then goes back to being herself again.
I like
yes,
I liked the giant half human half jackal thing.
That right,
like it looked like it might have been stop motion.
I don't know what it was.
It was either stop motion or very bad digital. I'm going to assume it was very
bad digital. I think it was bad digital.
Because if it were stop motion, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. Like,
no, I think it's like, I think it was motion capture or something. Anubis strain.
Yeah. I also...
Not an alien.
I also I also dug how when the lady who eventually gets impaled, she falls from a chute and lands on top of the blonde girl. And they just like crunch on top of her.
No, she lands on the camera guy.
Oh well, whatever. She lands on somebody.
Yeah.
And then I have two moments of dialogue that I like, both from blonde archaeologist's daughter.
Mm. Hot pants.
The minute something like when she is impatient and upset to get out, someone maybe has just died. And she acts as though it's a giant inconvenience to her. Because her next line is always, we need to find an exit right now. Like 40 minutes later, another thing happens, a tragedy, that again, she reacts as though it's simply an inconvenience to her. And then she says, we need to get out of here right now. Like she says this about three times during the film. So yeah, there are elements of entertainment in this garbage.
Few and far between.
But they're not worth, you know, the $13 matinee ticket I spent.
Yeah.
Los Angeles has expensive movies. You guys.
Even when they're stupid.
Yeah. So that was terrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then there was Wild.
Yes.
Which is not terrible.
No, I was kind of stunned because this movie had a lot of things going against it for me. A, that it's directed by the guy who made Dallas Buyers Club. Don't even get me started on that one. B, I was not thinking that I would buy Reese Witherspoon as a recovering heroin addict.
Right.
Because she always strikes me as... what's the phrase that Billy Crystal calls Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally? Miss Hospital Corners. Like, there's something about her that just seems always so in control all the time.
Well, her production company used to be called Type A. I don't know that it still is.
So, yeah, I was not really...
She's legendarily perfectionist.
Yeah. So, I was not ready for her to be all like, a mess, you know. Because that's... Look, not all actors can do everything. You know?
In the past, I have read articles where people have complained about her on sets, and she has responded to that complaint and said, I show up on time and I'm ready. If you're not, don't put it on me. Like, right. I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
But that's how she is.
Yeah. So, you know, that's
I believe it was a director, I think, who didn't like her.
She I know there was a co-star that she had issues with.
Yeah, too. And it's always come. It always would come down to her saying, "I'm sorry, but I'm here to work."
Yeah,
and if you're not, then we're not going to get along.
Go peddle your papers.
Yeah.
So those two things, and then just the whole plot of it. I mean, it's based on a memoir, but it sounded so much like, oh, so this is going to be Eat, Pray, Love crossed with 127 Hours.
Right.
It all was not sounding appealing, but as it turns out. A smarter movie, a funnier movie.
Yes.
It's written by Nick Hornby.
Yep.
And Witherspoon is really good.
She's really good.
And really convincing, even as a heroin addict.
It's moving.
Yeah. And the sort of personal growth stuff doesn't feel sort of
gross.
Yes, exactly. And, you know,
because it's quiet.
Yes.
And if I want to give Jean-Marc Vallée, the director, that. Like, yes. He directs it very quietly. Mm-hmm. He stands back, and this is her show.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing he was kind of for hire. And she hired him.
Yeah.
And I think she was very smart to hire him, because what he does do well, even though I don't think he's aesthetically ambitious at all.
No.
I don't think he cares what his films look like very much.
But, although this is pretty. It's postcard pretty, thanks to the location.
Nice cinematographer action going on. He's good with his actors. He lets his actors do what they think they need to do. Mm-hmm. And she's good enough to carry the ball on her own.
And it's funny. I mean, the movie that should have reminded me that, no, she can play this kind of character was her rather brief appearance in Mud.
Mud, yes.
Which starred Matthew McConaughey,
who
won an Oscar under Vallée's direction in Dallas Buyers Club. So I'm sure, I don't know what the connection is there, if any. But, this movie's actually really quite effective. And I liked how they don't pussyfoot around how this character is not only just a personal mess. She's a mess as a hiker.
Yeah.
She starts this
incredibly well prepared.
No, she starts this arduous 3-month trek from Mexico to Canada, and you see her in like the hotel room where she started, in the motel room, and every single thing that she has, like, she just bought at REI.
Yeah,
like everything is new in the package.
Lots of product placement going on for REI.
Yeah,
too.
Definitely. Yeah. So
there's even a moment where she says, "You're my new favorite company," to them on the phone. I'm like,
"Well, if that actually happened to the author, I could see where she would insist that would be in the movie because they really do come through for her at a key moment."
I didn't read the book, so maybe they did. Maybe that is REI's thing. I will never go on a hike ever again. I would like to tell a little story about this.
Oh, by the way, before I forget, somebody, the daughter of the critic whose house we were at today, heard your thing on Unfictional about my family and thought it was hilarious. And
house were you at?
At Myron Mizell's house. And and she was saying that...
did she know the connection? What was
it? Because you say my name in the story.
Oh, okay.
She was, I'm listening to it. It was really funny. And then he mentions Alonzo, and I'm like, wait, I knew them.
Okay, so we're in Maine. Now, I'm not complaining.
Oh, no.
Here. And the reason I'm not complaining is because we spend a week in Maine at one of the Duralde brothers' summer home. Mm-hmm. You heard that correctly. Summer home. They have a second mountain home, too, by the way.
In addition to their home.
In addition to their home. I'm telling you, when you go to visit these people... It's sweet. All right. We show up at the summer home, and they've got lobster waiting for us. Mm-hmm. Bibs handed to us as we walk in the door. Here, have a bib. Lobster's ready for you. We've been waiting for you. Like, it's like that. It's like conquering heroes welcome. Therefore, I am not complaining about what happened.
Okay.
Then we get on a boat. Take his boat to an island. Like, oh God, we're going to go spend a day on some island off the coast of Maine. It's summertime.
It's like an artist's colony
or cool. Yeah. We're going to hike this island. This island's got a lot of tall rocks. We're going to hike them. We all go off on a hike, all 37 of us.
No.
Oh, how many of us were there?
It was 14.
No.
Or 13.
No, none
of the kids were there. It was just it was just my siblings and their spouses.
It seemed like everyone.
There were no kids at this trip.
I was multiplying it by children.
No.
All 37 of us head out for this hike. And then somehow we get turned around.
Yeah. The thing is, my family has never been one for hiking in the past. And what we're really bad at is directions. So this was doomed from the get-go, I think.
And then it turns out these rocks are really big and tall. And you've got to, like... scaled them. And
we're lost.
And we're lost. And it's getting hot. And there's no place to sit and have... Like, I remember, did we stop and eat some lunch?
Yeah,
for a
on like a cliffside.
Yeah.
Overlooking the water.
Yeah, that was nice. Mm-hmm. But then we had to go down the rocks. It was not great. It was exhausting. I kept my mouth shut the entire time because I know better than anything else. To complain or make a scene about anything is to become someone's story later. That task fell to your oldest sister, Maria, who wanted a cigarette break every few steps. And started kvetching when she didn't get this. And I was like, oh, it's so hot. It's so awful. Why are we doing this? And I was like, yay, go. Go, Maria. Complain about everything. Because that way I can privately think, oh, God, could this be over soon, please? And I don't have to say it because she's saying it for me.
There you go.
And then Beth, your sister-in-law, the newest, the latest sister-in-law. Yes. And last.
Yes.
The last of the people to marry a Duralde.
Correct.
Walks up to me at the end and she goes, you're such a trooper. And I said, I am.
If she only knew. I mean,
but I took a nice nap on the ferry on the way back.
I have never been a real, like, a hiker, like, because this is, we're talking people who carry the tents on their back in the backpack and they, like, camp out. And
that's
no,
the worst.
Not doing that ever.
I don't know. If you like doing that, that's great.
Never,
you know,
gonna do that, but
more adventures to you.
And this,
but
is,
nature sucks. I'm not interested in being out in
it. Where I did relate to all this, obviously in a much different way, because you're doing it on city sidewalks and it's not the same.
Wild animals biting you.
Yeah. You know,
queen snakes. You get chomped by a queen snake and you've had it.
Linus Van Pelt. I used to do the Avon Walk for Breast Cancer, which is, you know, it's not in any way a hike. It's a long walk, you know, on city sidewalks.
Right.
But, you know, the first day is a marathon. You're walking 26 miles. And I liked how this movie kind of captures what goes through your head when you're walking for a long time like that, you know, whether you're by yourself or other people. Specifically, how snippets of songs will get caught in your head and just repeat and repeat and repeat. Like, you hear the same chunk of Simon and Garfunkel's El Condor Pasa, you know, in through her head over and over and over again. And there's a really funny scene where she meets up with these other campers and they're looking at each other. And one of them's like, don't say it, don't say it. And the other one, like, starts a song that is, like, the worst earworm on earth. So it was...
Four non-blondes.
Yes, I wasn't going to give it away.
But four non-blondes.
Anyway, just little details like that I thought were really...
It's set in 1995, that's why.
Yeah, we're well smart and well observed and funny. And yeah, Witherspoon's really good. I bought all of the facets of her character. Laura Dern has a very lovely supporting performance as her mother.
Here's the other thing I liked about it. It is a film about how men ruin everything. And it's true, they do.
Yes.
If you remember, in my non-best-selling book, Exile in Guyville, I talk about how whenever I am walking down the street...
This is not in Guyville.
Yes, it is.
If this includes the Gwyn Turner Coda, it
does
not in Guyville. Oh, okay.
It does, but it does not.
I see.
In the book, I talk about how I'm walking down the street, and every time a single woman is walking in my direction, she crosses the street to avoid me.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, in 99, when we first moved here, I felt kind of like, but I'm so sweet. You know, like...
You took umbrage.
I didn't take umbrage, but I was like, why? I'm not... I mean, I know I look like Shrek, but it's not, you know, I'm nice. And so I tell this story to Gwen, our friend Gwen. And she looks at me and takes one beat and says, well, stop raping us.
Not one to mince words.
Yeah. And so every encounter with a man in this film, whether that man is benign or
dangerous,
is initially framed as a threat, as a potential threat.
Yeah.
And even the nice guys are given things to do that suggest that they might become very dangerous very quickly.
Yeah, she's constantly having to sort of suss out the situation.
Yeah. And so
movies don't see that a lot.
You don't see that a lot in films. This is a really great example of what it's like. I mean, this is sort of on the metaphorical level. This is what it is for a woman to walk through the world.
Right.
This is, you know, every encounter with a guy, you have to figure out, right, what's he going to do to me?
Yeah.
You know, And I think that's a really
how can I flee? If
that's
it turns
an
out
interesting choice
indeed
for the
a
film
rapist.
To make.
No, actually, there are a lot of sort of the metaphors I think land here without being too heavy-handed. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't until I sat down to write about it that I realized that, you know, part of the whole thing with, you know, all the new stuff that she's got, that her incredibly heavy backpack that's weighing her down, you know, people along the way sort of show her, this you should carry, this you don't need so much.
Right.
And then it was like, oh,
yeah.
She's getting rid of her baggage,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't...
But they don't hit you over
they
the
don't
head
hit you over the head with that.
Yeah.
Movie. So, yeah, people should see it. I like it a lot. Then I saw two movies.
You've seen two movies that I haven't seen.
One is Life Partners, which was the opening night film at Outfest this year.
I've seen like 10 minutes of that,
and
of the 10 minutes I saw, it was funny.
Yeah, you laughed.
Yeah.
It stars Leighton Meester and Gillian Jacobs.
Leighton Meester being funny.
Leighton Meester being funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knew?
I did not know.
They play like longtime best friends. The Leighton Meester's character is gay, and Gillian Jacobs is straight. But they hang out. They're, you know, they're girl bros. And then Gillian Jacobs starts dating Adam Brody and spending more time with him. And suddenly that kind of throws a wrench in their friendship. And, you know, it's that thing of where one person, you know, is ready to move on and the other one isn't. And, you know, it's this is, if it were two dudes, this would be a Judd Apatow movie. But it's two women and one's gay and one's straight. But it's really a movie about female friendship. And I had this conversation. Well, you know, I signed it to Ingu Kang to review for The Wrap, and she was kind of lukewarm on it. And then Christy and I reviewed it on What the Flick, and she was kind of lukewarm on it. And I was like, I thought this was a movie that straight women were really going to love, and the two straight women who I work with the most are sort of eh. So I don't know.
Not all straight women.
Yeah, hashtag. in fact, when Christy posted the What the Flick link, I said something like, misogynists like you and Ingu are ruining it for us feminists. but yeah, I thought it was a really smart movie about female friendship, the way that, like, For a Good Time Call was, or, you know, Bridesmaids is.
Uh-huh.
Women seem to maybe not all think so, but it definitely, I mean, at Outfest it played like gangbusters, and believe me, when people don't like an opening night film, they come and tell me about it.
Yeah.
But this year, people laughed, people raved about it later.
Right.
I think it's a lot of fun. I think people should check it out. Gabri Sidibe has a funny supporting role, as does Kate McKinnon, and... Abby Elliott. It's on a few screens, but it's also available on demand everywhere in the U.S.
So you can watch it no matter where you are.
Yeah. So check it out. I think it's pretty funny, and I think it's kind of to me it felt sort of genuinely observed and sharp, and you know, I laughed a lot.
What else did you see?
And then I saw Still Alice, which I'm not really reviewing because I know Richard Glatzer, who's one of the two directors. I've known him for a long time.
I've met him, but I don't really know him.
Richard and his partner, Wash Westmoreland, won the Audience and Jury Prize at Sundance for their movie Quinceañera. They also did The Last of Robin Hood. They've done some other stuff together. Richard directed Grief, which was one of my favorite new queer cinema films back in the day. And this one stars Julianne Moore as a woman who is sort of one of the leading experts in language acquisition. She's a professor at Columbia. And she begins noticing that she is, ironically enough, losing words and not remembering things. And it turns out that she has early onset Alzheimer's. And
boom, Alonso Duralde, button push.
Yes, exactly. And so it's, you know, the movie mostly lives and dies on her performance, I will say. But I think that's kind of by design because, I mean, it's about her and her journey. But it's done interestingly. It's not, you know, this sort of disease of the week kind of movie you might be expecting. She is no angel, you know, like she will exploit what's happening to her to get other people to do what she wants, like to get out of obligations.
That's
or,
what I would do.
Yeah, like to try, you know.
Her, oh, dude, I've got Alzheimer's.
Yeah, like
I can't.
She has She has three kids. There's a lawyer played by Kate Bosworth. There's a doctor played by Hunter Parrish, and then the third daughter, who's played by Kristen Stewart, who's really good in this. Shockingly,
I'm not shocked by that at all.
Well, you know, you're right. I keep forgetting that she has it in her to be good. She's good in this.
Yeah.
She's an actress, and she, you know, the family lives in New York. She went to L.A. to make it as an actress, and Alice is always trying to get her to go to college.
Yeah.
And she continues to keep trying to get her to go to college and, like, trying to milk the Alzheimer's as a way for her to keep bringing it up and stuff. And, you know, and it deals with, like, end-of-life issues. It deals with, you know, what happens when you, you know, your family and loved ones sort of have to balance the idea of helping you through a situation with their own progress in life and their own wants and needs. And it's really well done. It definitely worth seeing for Julianne Moore's performance. It's, you know, a lot of awards talk around her, and deservedly so. She's really good in it. And but I think even beyond just that one thing, there's a lot to like in this movie. Like I said, Kristen Stewart's really good. Alec Baldwin plays the husband. He's good. And, you know, I feel like it kind of... There's a subplot regarding, like, her trying to plan a suicide.
Right.
I won't get into it, but, I mean, saying that isn't a spoiler. But it at least it takes the issue seriously, and it explores it in a way that, like, you know, when we're talking about What the Flake, I said, you get so many movies where they'll talk about abortion for 5 seconds and then, you know, like, run screaming from it. Like, yeah. This one actually will sort of, they sort of pursue the idea and see where it takes them. So yeah, that's, I mean, it's really going to open wide in 2015. But
January,
January, February. But it's doing its qualification run now, and you know, believe me, if you're one of those people who wants to see all the nominated performances, you will most likely be seeing Still Alice.
You know, I'll be seeing it and I'll be reviewing it, and when it finally it gets its real release,
yeah,
I'm still not going to murder you. No matter what you say, I'm not doing it. I am not going to murder you.
You have access to so many prescription drugs via my medical siblings.
I know.
It would be so easy.
I'm just saying it right now on this podcast. I will walk you into all the dementia and whatever happens to you. I will nursemaid you until you're
I need
dead.
A very specific living will because I do to. Not want.
We went to see Away from Her, yes, which is Sarah Pauley film starring Julie Christie, which is about the same thing.
And that's my DVD pick this week, by the way.
And on the way home, we're driving home, and he turns to me and he says, "Okay, my greatest fear is losing my ability to process thought and to remember things." And to be clever. So in the day this happens to me, murder me. Those are the words you used.
Yeah.
Murder me.
I didn't want there to be any half measures. Yeah. Or like that you misunderstood what I meant.
That ain't happening.
Because if there's no plug for you to pull.
I like
pull,
murder
no,
in films.
I want to not be alive for that. And I don't think that that's an outrageous request. And I think in many countries, that request would be honored and taken seriously. It's true.
Not in this. Oops. Oh. I hit the microphone.
Drink.
Put your bingo card. I ain't going to murder you.
Well.
Too bad.
You're a lousy husband.
Not taking you seriously at this house. Mm. No requests honored.
Fine. Perhaps a listener would care to come murder
Listeners,
me.
Would anyone like to murder Alonso Duralde when he
Not now.
Gets
but if,
a debilitating mental condition
if my brain
when he ages? If you would like to be the person who murders Alonso Duralde, we would like you to enter this essay contest. 25 words or less. Why you should be the one who's allowed to murder Alonso Duralde when he decides
in,
to... In the event of Alzheimer's or dementia or anything else.
Yes.
Look, dude, here's the thing. In the last year of my mother's life, she slid into a bit of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't remembering things. She was confused a lot, but otherwise it was fairly peaceful, and she wasn't flipped out by it.
That's fine.
And
I'm
and
not
then
saying.
She just, and then she just peacefully went.
I'm not saying murder.
So.
I'm not saying murder everybody. I'm saying murder me. This is my personal choice. If other people,
Gary Cotty's on our couch right now eating snacks. Are you awake, Gary Cotty? Would you like to be the one to murder Alonso Duralde? Oh, he's having a nap.
He's having a nap.
Actually.
You know, look.
How you can nap while we're podcasting.
I can't imagine. Well, I'm sure people do while they're listening at home.
Maybe they do.
Our friend Dennis Smeal wants to have, you know, all of Proust's In Search of Lost Time read to him.
I think that's a great idea.
If he slips into a coma before they can pull the plug. And that's fine. I respect that choice. I want my choice respected as well.
All right, so your DVD pick of the week was
Away From Her, Sarah Polley's directorial debut, an extraordinary film featuring a very powerful performance by Julie Christie as a woman slipping into Alzheimer's and how it affects her relationship to her husband.
It's pretty heartbreaking.
It is devastating, yeah, but brilliant and perfect for the holiday season.
Yes.
No, it's a great movie, though.
Mine is Ziegfeld Girl.
Explain.
Here's why. I'm still in the middle of my ongoing process of watching every Judy Garland film in a chronological order.
Gay!
And you're the last person that should be throwing that word around. You know this doesn't have a thing to do with gay. We've had so many talks about this on this podcast.
I know. We've
discussed this on this podcast before.
I'm just saying it to get a rise out of you.
Ain't about gay. It's about how she's better than everybody.
Yes, no question.
So I'm watching Ziegfeld Girl.
Uh-huh.
That movie's a trip. It's like Valley of the Dolls, but from like 1941.
Was there still a Ziegfeld Follies at the time the movie's made, or was it already a period piece?
It might have been a period piece. I think it was like, we take her back to yesteryear with the Ziegfeld, blah, blah, blah.
Gotcha.
And so
does Fanny Bryce play herself or anything?
It's Lana Turner,
mm-hmm,
okay, and Hedy Lamarr.
Mm-hmm. Who Dave did not realize was one of the great radio inventors of the 20th century.
I had no idea that Hedy Lamarr was like this super genius who invented things.
Yeah, go Google Hedy Lamarr inventor. You'll be amazed.
There needs to be a biopic of her. Screw the Imitation Game.
Yeah.
I need a biopic about Hedy Lamarr and her inventing stuff while being
radio
like
dispersal
the most
frequencies
beautiful human being on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, Hedy Lamarr walks into every scene of this film, and people's heads break as they snap to look at her and are like, whoa! And she just sort of, like, glides through the scene, you know. Alana Turner, who was herself, you know,
no slouch herself,
a bombshell, she's, like, the cute one in the movie. So compared to Hedy Lamarr, Alana Turner is just the cute one.
And then there's Judy.
And then there's Judy who sings. And I can't imagine the hell of, like, Judy meet your co-stars. Lana Turner and Hedy Lamarr. Feel bad about yourself today?
Here's some more diet pills.
Yeah. Like, it is as though they constructed an actual torture gauntlet for this poor woman to go through. Just making her feel horrible about herself all the time. Granted, she shows up and sings,
yes,
and the whole movie belongs to her.
Right.
It's a weird, weird movie about what women are allowed to be, what women are supposed to do, what ambitious women are supposed to be like, and how they're not supposed to step over certain boundaries, and what the consequences of stepping over those boundaries are, like death.
Oh my.
And so it's a strange and weird movie, but again, it's got Judy Garland in it and she's, you know, killing it.
What's the big song in it? What's her big number?
You're asking me specifics and I'm blank.
Oh, okay,
but there's a great moment where she is under the influence of her vaudeville father,
mm-hmm,
and she comes in and this is her big song, and I'm blanking on the name of the song. She comes in and sings it in the old-timey style, where you, like, get him in the gut right away.
Right.
And the auditioners are like, oh, God, no, not this. And they say, no, 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 this is all wrong. And she's like, give me another chance. They give her another chance, and she, you know,
torches it.
She smooths it out and croons it and does that spine-tingling, amazing thing that she always did.
Right.
And they're like, you're the new star of the Ziegfeld Follies, young lady. Like, meanwhile, she's like 3 feet shorter than every other woman.
Right.
But she's the star. Like, her story is the plucky underdog who becomes a star.
Right.
Lana Turner is the, you know, gets a little too big for her britches and meets a stony end. And then Hedy Lamarr is the woman who gives it all up for love.
Ah.
Yeah. But her husband, her future, the guy she gives it up for is kind of a jerk.
You don't say.
Because he's like, it's either me or the Follies. And she's like, I need to eat. So, yeah. Plus, I've got some inventions I've got to work on.
5, 6, 7, 8.
I've got this radio thing that's going to destroy Hitler. You really need to take a seat while I go save the planet.
And invent cell phones.
Yeah.
Before we get into letters, we have a
there word. There's only one letter.
Well, before we get to letter, we have a word from our sponsor.
Reed Martin. What's up, Reed Martin? It's been a while since we've seen you.
Welcome back, Reed Martin.
The real truth.
For Christmas.
Everything you didn't know you need to know about making an independent...
Why don't you say it again?
The real truth, R-E-E-L, is the sponsor of today's podcast.
Yes.
Subtitled, Everything You Didn't Know You Need to Know About Making an Independent Film.
From Faber and Faber.
From Faber and Faber. I have not said that title in a while, and I tripped. Here's the copy that Reed sent us. I'm going to read it cold. This is a book that could just as easily be called The Real Truth, Everything Independent Film.
Boom.
For short, because that's what you get.
Everything.
A one-stop how-to guide to making your first or second indie film the right way. As we've said many times before, and we'll tell you again, this is a book that will help you avoid many of the pitfalls that trip up even the biggest names in the independent film world who tell their stories. And the book's 540 pages. It's basically like the Bible.
Only more believable.
He gets everybody. He talks to everybody in this book. Yeah. Werner Herzog, Kim Pierce, Lee Daniels, Danny Boyle, Darren Aronofsky, all these other cats.
Mm-hmm.
You can read about what they wish they had known before making their first movies straight from their first-person accounts and then use the three different actual film budgets in the back of the film, in the back of the book, to make sure you raise enough money and don't run out of funds halfway through your project like a dummy.
Yeah.
I added the like a dummy. That's not in the copy. But you are a dummy if you don't do it the right way. If you don't get this book, honestly, you're kind of a dummy. And your movie will fail.
Yes.
I think I've said that before.
I believe so.
In pitching this book. And I'm right. Still.
Yes.
That hasn't changed.
Quit mucking about. If you're going to make a movie, get this book first.
The Real Truth also covers everything you need to know about writing business plans, fundraising, marketing, theatrical distribution. It is the one book you need to move forward and make your dream a reality. A reality. The Real Truth, available on Amazon in paperback and in Kindle and iTunes books format if you have an iPad.
Well, all right.
The end of the ad.
So there.
Get that book. And I got a letter.
Thank you, Martin.
And then we're done. Because I have to go. I'm going to a record launch tonight.
My new single drops Tuesday. It drops Tuesday. Whatever that joke is.
That's right. This is from Michael. He's a new listener. Dear Alonzo and Dave, just some fan mail.
From some flounder.
To let you guys know how much I'm enjoying the podcast, which I started listening to just a couple of months ago on a friend's advice.
Well, thanks, friend.
I want to interrupt this letter. All y'all who listen, the way we grow is you forcing your friends to listen to us. And then after they listen to it once and they go, no, those guys are awful. You say, no, give it a chance.
They grow on you.
It'll be better the next time. And see, and that's what you have to do for us. You have to coddle and coax and cajole your friends. And if you do this, we will become super incredibly popular podcasters. Right now, we're only somewhat popular podcasters. We're very famous in this house.
Yes.
At dinner time. And we had a lot of friends come to our Christmas party yesterday, so we're somewhat popular with those friends as
yes.
well.
Yes. There was somebody, I forget, who met Gary Cotti. He's like, oh, Gary Cotti. Like, they knew the name. The it was very exciting.
Too bad he's napping. You can't hear what we're saying.
Yes.
How much did I enjoy Alonzo's reference to the Lillian Vernon catalog last week? This much. Also, to go whole box of condoms on has entered our phraseology at home. There are so many takeaways from your show every week. I'm trying to be a good...
You cannot, however, get a whole box of condoms from the Lillian Vernon catalog.
No, you can't. I'm trying to be a good and loyal fan and have given you a 5-star review on iTunes.
Yay! Please follow his lead, feed people.
I'd like a linoleum knife shirt.
Great.
And I'm sure you're out of my size by now. Actually, we are not. Based on the report from a week ago, if perchance you have an extra large left, let me know, and I'll pay PAL ASAP. We do have an extra large left. We have a few, I think we have like this little plug for the shirts in the middle of this letter. We have like a medium size left. We have
some smalls.
Maybe one small left. And we've got like two, maybe three extra larges left. Right. We're dwindling down to the bottom.
We have, our stores have been depleted. Yep. So act now if you want one of those.
Hang on, I'll get to that. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm expecting to jump on that in the new year when you have a new stock. Merchandising idea. How about pinup posters of each of you? For those of us who think you're hot stuff.
Yeah.
I dream of a Dave White pinup for my locker. Swoon. Just a thought. That's what he says. Michael. Michael thinks I'm a pinup.
What would be the theme of your pinup exactly?
Kill. Except you with Alzheimer's. That would be the theme.
You're useless. The one time the kill, the one you're
I find it weird that he wants a pinup of me. You're the cute one.
You have a demo.
I look like the guy who comes to fix the sink.
That has a demo.
I know.
It's the plumber. They've come to fix the sink.
And he says, looking forward to that Poseidon commentary, which is coming in January.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So now, okay, those
signed.
We have T-shirts left.
Signed
Michael. I said that's
okay.
From Michael.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, we have fewer than a handful of T-shirts left. But we have, we have a little bit of a handful of books left.
Yes. So if you want a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas before Christmas, act now.
Yeah, like this second. Because not only will it not get to you in time, maybe, but we're fixing to run out of those, too.
Yeah, we've been scrambling to get more copies, but, it may be, we may not have enough by Christmas. So if you want one, get
busy.
Yeah, get the word to us.
$20.
PayPal is $20.
Now, you could buy it cheaper on Amazon if you wanted to.
But if you want it,
the $20 gets you the deluxe edition.
Yes.
And the deluxe edition has a signature in it and
treats.
Extra goodies. Things that you will enjoy.
Added value,
yeah. And it's also gift wrapped.
Yes.
So if you want to, it'd be like a gift to yourself that you could put under the tree and unwrap. And when you unwrap it, you'll find all the little treats that are inside the book, literally in the pages of the book. Some will be hard for you to find until you actually get to that page because they're so thin. Others will jump right out at you, basically.
And if you're giving the book as a gift to someone else, you can hand them this beautifully wrapped package. And when they'll be like, oh my God, you gave me this book. Oh, and look inside the book, all these treats.
Treats.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Linoleum.
None of them are food.
No. Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That is our PayPal address.
Yeah.
It is $20 for domestic shipping for the book and for the T-shirt.
These
are each $20.
Yes.
So act now, act fast if you want this to be a holiday thing for you.
Act like you know.
Yes.
The end.
Yes. So anyway.
End of podcast.
As always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends online. Go to ChrissyLemire.com. Listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Matt and Gray. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Dennis Ending with Dennis Hensley. The Schmoes Know. The Bret Easton Ellis podcast. I don't have my list in front of me, but all of our usual folks.
Buy our extra episodes, Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Yes, we just recorded the 1959 Santa Claus. We've also got White Christmas. And if you're in a non-holiday mood, you could check out our other ones. The Apple, Clue, Two for the Road, and Josie and the Pussycats. Definitely check out the Feliz Navipod podcast, which, despite its name,
it ain't bad.
It's Christmassy, but it's not Christmas related. It's they do the same stuff year round, but with fun guests and cool music, and it's a fun show. You can be like
the extra episodes are $1.99.
Yes, and those are also PayPal to Gmail to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
So sorry, yeah.
And make sure you include the email address where you want those sent. You can like our Facebook page and go join the Linoleum Knife group on Facebook to talk to each other and to us sometimes.
You can follow us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter @LinoleumCast. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe for free at iTunes. And if you want to leave
There's a lot of stuff you've got to do.
Leave us a 5-star review, as Michael did. That
Just
does
break
help
it down into a list.
Find the show.
Of all the things we've told you to do.
You can also stream us on Stitcher and at thelounge.com. And you can leave us positive feedback there as well.
I like to make a list on paper with a piece of paper with a pencil. And then I can cross things off the list. I don't like putting things on a phone. like a list on paper.
Do you have your 2015 at a glance yet?
No, I'm going to order it like this week. Man. It'll be here by December. Look, here's what's going to be
so
great.
You are slipping.
No, I'm going to order it, and then it's going to show up like right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then when Christmas is over, I'm going to have like that whole week to just start putting things in my new at a glance for 2015.
That's great.
No hassles. No, like a week of no work. Just fun times with me in my new at a glance. I'm going to sharpen all my pencils.
I hope you'll be very
James
happy
Vaughn. In addition to the giant box of British candy that he sent us, listener James Vaughn, who is the best human being in Europe, sent me a pencil sharpener in the shape of Big Ben.
Yes.
I already have a really cool pencil sharpener, but now I have two cool pencil sharpeners.
And you can never have enough.
I can never have enough pencil sharpeners because I have a lot of pencils.
To write a lot of lists.
So you go make your own list of all the things we just told you to do, some of which include giving us your money.
And then do them.
And then go do them. Follow us on Twitter. Did you give us the Twitter?
I did, at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show.
At D. Leland White.
True, or at
L-E-L-A-N-D, my middle name, at D. Leland
or
White.
At A. Duraldi.
You've got a million Twitter followers. I need more.
Well, you do. But you can also follow me on Twitter, at A. Duraldi. You can check into the show, tvtag.com. I think I've covered our stuff here. So,
the end.
As always, we thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
To me, you are Fartzilla.
Shut up.
Goodbye.